Every 10 years, the Wisconsin legislature struggles to draw new lines for 8 U.S. House districts, 33 state Senate districts, and 99 Assembly districts. And every 10 years for the last 30, federal judges have ended up drawing those lines and ordering that they govern elections until the next U.S. Census. This year, Republicans control the governor's office, the state assembly, and the state Senate. They announced their proposed new lines on Friday, July 8th, held a public hearing on those maps on Wednesday, July 13th, and plan to pass them through both the Assembly and the Senate next week, all in the space of about 11 or 12 days. To talk about the reapportionment process in the Capitol, this year I want to thank, to my left, Rebecca Mason, attorney, Godfrey & Kahn. That firm has been involved in redistricting for decades, and now she represents citizens from across the state, including former Democratic legislators who have asked federal judges draw the lines again. James Troupas, attorney, Troupas Law Firm, has been involved in redistricting on behalf of Republicans for over 3 decades and is now counsel to Republican leaders. And Andrea Kaminsky, Executive Director, League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. And Andrea questioned both the process and the maps at Wednesday's hearing. So Andrea, why don't you start us off? You voiced some pretty strong objection to the process yesterday. What's wrong with the process this time?
Well, I'd like to mention that for 91 years, the League of Women Voters has advocated for equal representation and electoral integrity. And so every 10 years, the League has been very involved in the redistricting and reapportionment process. As a nonpartisan citizen organization, our members have devoted countless hours to providing public issue forums, public educational forums at the local and state levels. We've had more than a dozen of those in the past 18 months to help people understand why redistricting matters, why it's important to their representation in their government. And also our members serve on county redistricting committees, and two of our members in the greater Green Bay area have petitioned the circuit court in Brown County with a plan for redistricting. So we've been very involved. What our concern is that there be equal representation and good protections for underrepresented groups. Traditionally and by law, the process in Wisconsin begins with local redistricting, and that's where our members get very involved. Then it goes to the state after, but not until after nonpartisan local officials and citizens spend weeks and months preparing,
drawing their own ward,
drawing local maps,
ward lines.
That's right. Then it goes to the state traditionally, and the state. And the legislature does the final maps. But this year, this new proposal really turns that process top down. It begins with the legislature, even though the local groups have been working on it for months. It begins with the legislature, and what it says to all those local officials and those citizens who have been working and spending volunteer hours and tax dollars all this time is, too bad if your maps don't match what we are providing. Too bad, you're just going to have to adapt. Inconveniently, that would break the law, so while they're at it, they're changing the law. So that is why the League opposes this process.
And didn't you also say yesterday that nobody saw these maps until Friday, July 8th? So you kind of registered of, can't we all slow down this train and everybody take a look at these lines?
Yes, we also have a big problem with the speed at which this is going.
Okay. Now, Jim, you've been vitally involved with these maps. Do you want to respond to Andrea?
Let me start off first by saying very clearly, I am not here as a representative of the leaders of the Assembly and the Senate, though I represent them, and I'll be very careful to avoid that, and I'm not speaking on their behalf, and would not pretend to, but because of the many years I've had of experience, I can make some observations.
You can talk about these maps.
Pretty clearly, I think that we'll be able to have that discussion. First of all, there was a bit of truly strange misinformation yesterday upon two levels, which I think led to the League's misunderstanding. First of all, with regard to the ward boundaries, the companion legislation, which I believe is at Senate Bill 150, in fact doesn't impose anything on the locals. The locals, in fact, it removes the barrier so that they can create smaller wards that match the lines that are coming from the legislature. They don't have to change anything. They don't have to change a single supervisory district or aldermanic district. If they have it, they may have to create smaller wards, and then, as you know, those wards could be combined for electoral purposes on any basis to avoid any inconvenience. So there was really, in yesterday's hearing, I did sit back and I candidly chuckle a bit, because everybody was misunderstanding Senate Bill 150, the purpose of which was to avoid the very thing they were talking about, which was to allow the ward boundaries to be drawn within the legislative boundaries, but they could still compose those supervisory districts with as many wards as they want. Doesn't change it at all. The second thing has to do with timing, which again, was willfully misrepresented by members of the Democratic Party. They spent over $100,000 last year, not this year, last year in redistricting. That is only for attorney's fees and the like last year. So they've had statistical data for well over a year after the census and the preliminary census data was available in 2010. In 2011, every group in the state, every group in the country for that matter, has had access to the same data and information that was used by the Republican leadership in bringing forth these Senate bills. So the idea that they don't have alternative maps, the idea that somehow they were prevented from this process, I mean, it's silly. They've had all the same information, and they have maps. They have alternatives. Likely many of these groups do. But if they choose a federal lawsuit or a lawsuit over bringing them forward and attempting to address them, there's nothing leadership can do about them.
Rebecca, thanks for your patience. But it's the position of you and your legal team that the Wisconsin legislature can't draw maps and federal judges should do so, correct? Do I have that?
Correct me.
Thank you.
I think that we've heard a lot yesterday during the hearing testifying about concerns with the process, and you know, if you look at how other states handle redistricting, there are a variety of different ways that states can redraw their district boundaries. The lawsuit, the 15 citizens from across the state, is not asking the federal courts to impede on the state's obligation to draw constitutional boundaries.
Okay.
The bottom line is whether the process is the state legislature, some nonpartisan panel that some people have been advocating, or a panel of judges ultimately, the bottom line is that the process has to result in a map that's constitutional.
Okay. And that's the sole position of your clients?
Correct.
And so why then have you petitioned federal court to take jurisdiction in this case?
Because federal rights are at issue.
Federal rights are at issue.
And for the last 40 years, the federal courts have drawn the maps for Wisconsin districts.
Okay. And is it fair to say that your legal team filed this motion 10 years ago, which ended up in federal court, and federal court has never really let the issue go? Is that a fair summary?
For the last 40 years, the federal courts have drawn the lines for Wisconsin.
And ergo, federal judges still have jurisdiction.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Andrea, you believe there's a better process, don't you? Do you want to talk about that a minute?
Sure. The League, since 1981, has advocated to have redistricting carried out by a nonpartisan or bipartisan entity. Whether that, right now there's a proposal that be done by the Legislative Reference Bureau and the Government Accountability Board. It doesn't have to be that, something like that. It's done in Iowa, in California, and this would take redistricting away from the very legislators who stand to gain or lose directly by how the lines are drawn. As it is now, the legislators can have the power to draw the districts, draw the boundaries, so that they can choose their voters. We believe, the League believes, that voters should choose their representatives.
Why is it that this idea, state of Iowa does it this way. seems to work. Why is it that Wisconsin cannot have a serious dialogue on a nonpartisan panel drawing the lines, Andrea?
Well, it's
funny. You've been watching this for a while.
The League has been advocating for that since 1981. I can tell you that in our League office, we have a letter from Assembly Majority Leader Dave Travis, who complained about how the League was being pro-Republican. He was a Dem. And saying that the League was supporting a pro-Republican approach. And the Democrats certainly had the opportunity last session to bring that a similar proposal for a vote. Now it's in the leadership is in the Republicans' hands. So the leadership has changed in the legislature. Our position hasn't.
Both sides, though, both R and D's, don't want to move forward your idea for an independent panel.
Depending on whether they're in power or not.
I understand. Any reaction to the independent panel, Rebecca, James?
It's a very interesting concept. I mean, I started out in 1980 on redistricting cases and working on these things, and you're right. The League is one of the people who's advocated for a very long time, both here and nationally, for a different type of process. I strongly disagree with that, but there are groups that have been doing that for a very long time. And I disagree with that because it's an extraordinarily cynical view of what legislators do or ought to do, and that somehow by giving them a free pass, we're going to give it to a government agency or some other independent group, somehow we don't have to carry out our function and we'll have greater respect for our legislative process. I think it's simply something that's inappropriate in our democracy.
And I would only note that yesterday, State Senator Bob Jauch, who's been in the institution, the legislature for 29 years, said reapportionment brings out the worst in all legislators, no matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican. do your clients have any position on the idea of an independent panel, Rebecca?
You know, I think that it's always good to evaluate your process and make sure that you're doing it in the most effective way. I think that ultimately, as I stated earlier, the most important and the baseline is that the process is fair and results in some map that meets the constitutional standards.
Okay.
And our clients, the citizens from across the state, do not take a position in terms of which process is the only process that could ultimately result in a constitutional map.
Okay, we've had decades now of judges saying this is the criteria for redistricting to be constitutional. What are the three or four chief criteria? Number one, the districts have to be have the same number of residents, correct?
Okay, that's equal representation.
That's mm-hmm. primus inter pares, first among equals, right? But after that, what are the main factors that judges look at in terms of whether a plan's legal?
It begins with that. That is the original Baker v. Carr. That it starts and ends with equal population. That's why you see this in the congressional districts, absolute zero based on the census, as opposed to the legislative districts, which are given a little more leeway. But that's been narrowing over the cycles. So equal populations. It always starts and constitutionally. Probably ends there as the only one where there's absolute agreement. I mean, I'm not suggesting that there isn't other constitutional criteria. Then the compact and contiguous is both a state constitutional and I think relatively speaking a federal constitutional requirement as well. Compact and contiguous,
okay.
So that they're all together. You couldn't take someone from here and go over here. Although interestingly, you can have a lake in between. We had some cases on that.
Okay.
And then. Sensitivity to minority interests.
Okay.
I think that you were referring earlier to the representation. It's not an equal representation question, but it's a sensitivity to the minority interest because it's an equal protection question. Redistricting was used for a very long time to disenfranchise minority groups, and so you know it was the source of much of what we think of modern civil rights legislation and modern civil rights cases was in redistricting. And so that compact and contiguous and equal population, you know, have to be combined with the idea of adequate representation to communities of interest, which in this case are in our state would be the African American population as well as the Latino population.
As I covered press conference on this issue, the term community of interest often comes up. Does that mean that you don't break up cities and communities and neighborhoods? Help me understand that. Your thoughts, Rebecca?
I think that when a court's looking at whether a redistricting map is constitutional, they look at all of the different facts that play into the drawing of each particular district as well as the map as a whole. And one of the things that they look at is definitely communities of interest, looking at whether boundaries of municipalities are respected, whether neighborhoods are held intact or whether they're divided. But they look at the whole picture.
Okay. Do your clients have a position on whether the GOP plan is constitutional? Have you studied it enough to have an opinion? Are you going to file in federal court that it isn't?
Well, let's be clear here. At this point, it's just a proposal. We still do not have a final map. If and when the legislature passes a map and if the governor signs it, we will definitely be closely scrutinizing the criteria that Jim's brought up, that he thinks that they've met, as well as all the criteria that the courts have brought up over the years of redistricting lawsuits, and we'll evaluate whether we think the map, the districts, comply with the constitutional criteria.
So you don't have an opinion as of this moment?
At this moment, we don't have a map.
Okay.
There's another...
Yes, Andrea, go ahead.
Yeah, there's another criterion that it may not be a matter, it's certainly not in the Constitution, but we believe it's important for the well-being of our state, and that is competitiveness. Right now, most of the districts are not competitive. They're pretty safe for one party or another. In yesterday's hearing, Wisconsin Democracy Campaign brought forth another map. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but they said that a much greater proportion of the districts in that map were competitive. They'd be within 10 percentage points for Republicans or Democrats. And the importance of that is that it gives better representation and it reduces the polarization. Candidates have to work for that middle ground, for those independent voters. Indeed, most Wisconsin voters are independent voters, and the map should reflect that tenor of the state, not the tenure of the local, of their current elected officials.
Jim, I do want to take a look at some three specific maps here in a minute, but the issue of how it treats Hispanics and African Americans was brought up at length in yesterday's hearing. Are you quite confident that this plan does them right?
Oh yes. I mean, there's extraordinary sensitivity to that question. We've been through two federal court proceedings involving that, so you know, the extraordinary sensitivity to those issues. So I really, as Professor Essenberg said in commenting on the map, you know, they're, I have no doubts at all.
Well, I think, wasn't it Professor Essenberg who said it does establish 4 African-American assembly seats with a sphere of influence?
Five over 60 and 1 over 50.
And so explain that, five over...
Oh, sure. The concept in map drawing, again, based on these various court precedent, is to provide communities the opportunity to select representatives of their choice. Many times that may involve various factors, including whether or not an African-American voter is likely to vote identically to a white voter, or the same true in the Hispanic community. So there's a fair amount of criteria that go into it. But there are some sort of baselines that have been established in the court proceedings all over the country. And when we talk about a majority-minority district, then we're talking about districts that almost by definition can elect a candidate of their choice, albeit their social scientists will come in and say you need higher percentages and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So when we refer to, and we'll refer to, and people will read about, that your viewers, these districts, everybody's talking about the percentage of that minority population, generally voting age population. So not simply total population, especially, for example, in Hispanic community, you may have a much larger total population, but the voting age population, because of the nature of that group today in this state, would be lower. So when we talk about the 60% and 50%, we're almost universally talking about voting age population.
So the GOP maps would have 5 African American assembly districts.
6 above 50, 5 above 60.
Thank you. Okay. And how does the GOP maps treat Hispanics, which you heard Representative Zamarripa say are the fastest growing segment in Wisconsin?
Absolutely.
Okay. How does it treat Hispanics, sir?
You need to, right now, the map that is proposed has is a 57% assembly districts voting age population. We heard testimony yesterday in support of a 60% voting age population and a 54% voting age population. I suspect that will be the subject of debate on the floor and what will come of that. So right today, you have 2 majority-minority Hispanic districts, and the Senate district in which they lay is about 41% voting age population, and there's almost no doubt, I think everybody would agree, all demographers would agree, it will become a majority-minority Senate district during the cycle.
Okay, and there was one other point made repeatedly. Why are we going so fast in terms of passing this in 11 or 12 days? Jim, let me ask you, because the answer given was because of the threat of federal action as a result of your clients. So why is there a gun to the head to move so quickly because of what may happen in the federal courts, Jim?
First of all, the timing is entirely a leadership question. So you'll forgive me from a legal standpoint, I really don't. I mean, it doesn't matter one way or the other.
Okay.
But the lawsuit did, and I will be candid about that. The federal lawsuit that was filed affected the way lawyers would view it. In fact, I candidly was curious why the recalls were going forward, because there's a federal lawsuit that has just declared that none of the districts are legal. Well, if none of them are legal, I'm real curious how you can have recall elections in them. But that's an issue for another day, and I don't represent anybody in that. I just make that as a peanut gallery comment. But once you have a federal lawsuit filed that says these are illegal, and you're not carrying out your duty, and we want a federal court to take jurisdiction, those are serious matters. And it's certainly the legislative leaders must have taken that into account in getting where they got to, and I think that's reasonable.
I want to give you a chance to respond to the issue of timing and why you filed then.
Sure, and just to be clear, the federal court has not yet declared that the districts are unconstitutional. The citizens from across the state have requested that the federal court make that declaration, but they haven't yet made that declaration. And as I said earlier, the federal courts have drawn the maps in Wisconsin for the last 40 years. Filing this lawsuit in June of this year is actually later than similar lawsuits have been filed in previous redistricting litigation experiences. The lawsuit doesn't, I think, as you put it, hold a gun to the legislature's head and tell them that they have to act quickly or the federal courts are going to swoop in and take this over. The case law, the precedent is very clear that federal courts can take jurisdiction and should take jurisdiction when citizens have raised fundamental issues about their right to vote. And they should take a step back and wait for the state to conclude its process. And if the state concludes its process in a timely manner, then the courts can review the ultimate result, what the map is. And again, we still don't have a final map. When the lawsuit was filed a month ago, nothing had been proposed. There were no schedule set for evaluating a map. No hearings, no public hearings had been scheduled or had. And today we now have a map, and we're hearing that it may be or it has been scheduled for a floor vote next week.
It's supposed to be, yes, in both houses.
I'm also hearing that there may be some amendments that are floating around. We have no idea what the final map is going to look like, if there will be consensus, if the governor will sign it. I long ago gave up trying to predict what the legislators are going to do.
Okay.
So,
Andrea, go ahead.
I'd like to comment on that. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a citizen, and I'm representing a citizen group. And sometimes one gets to feeling like Alice in Wonderland as you try to follow the logic in these hearings. What I heard was that yesterday in the hearing was that, of course, it's the job of the legislature to draw the map. But there's been this federal lawsuit filed, and so the leadership in the legislature is concerned about about the court actually drawing the map. So therefore, they have to thumb their nose at local officials and local citizens and rush this through before there's a chance to really work on it. But they found that doing so would break the law. So so they're just changing the law while they're at it. I feel like Alice in Wonderland trying to follow the string of logic.
Quick response before we look at some maps, Jim?
Well, sure. Jim? You know, again, back to the point about the filing of the federal lawsuit, whether it was on purpose or not is not of consequence. But the fees and costs that they're seeking in the federal lawsuit to be paid by the state, because if they win, they get paid by the state, cannot accumulate at this point because a map is being introduced and is going forward. It's real when we say the effect of a federal lawsuit on the fisc of the state. So, you know, again, the leaders took that, certainly, I would assume, took that into account.
Well, GOP lawyers are being paid $300,000. Who's paying for your clients, if I might ask, Rebecca?
I can tell you who's not paying for it. Taxpayers are not paying for it. Correct.
Okay. Let's look at a few maps. The rubber hits the road here. First, let's look at the 7th District U.S. House. The current district is the one on the right. This, of course, it was represented for decades. Decades by Representative Dave Obey, who doesn't like the proposed map on the left, saying it drains Democratic-rich areas of central Wisconsin, flips them to the 3rd U.S. House District, making the 3rd U.S. House District more Democratic, and is nothing but an attempt to help first-term Republican Congressman Sean Duffy in the 7th. Mr. Obey says it breaks up community of interest. Jim, you've seen this map before. Does it break up community of interest?
I don't think so. And again, but it's a great question, Steve, because the when you look at a map, what communities can be kept together and what can't is always a trade-off with equal population and other and these other factors we're talking about. And that's what you're seeing, I think, in the 7th, is because you had to get to this zero population, absolute zero. Again, whether I agree with it or not in the congressional level, that's what they have to do. So you end up, because of growth in certain areas, having to shed territory and having to gain territory. And if I look at the 7th, it looks to me like a primarily northern Wisconsin district that follows through relatively rural areas throughout. It's kind of I call it the 90-94 district. It looks like, you know, you've followed up and then cross over. It looks like that's really the basis. And so I'd say, yeah, I mean, all those communities are very similar. What's dissimilar in this map from the map on the right? To me, they look pretty much the same.
Jim, let me ask something that Dave Obey said. Why is it that former state senator Pat Kreitler plans to challenge Duffy, and the new map of the Senate of the 7th U.S. House District takes Kreitler's house but doesn't take any of the district he represented in the Senate? And Obey says that's kind of petty. Do you want to respond?
If you apply the criteria, you're going to always be able to make arguments like that.
Okay.
I mean, every single time. You know, this isn't in, this should be in, that shouldn't be in. The question is whether the criteria are applied. The criteria were clearly applied.
Andrea, or any PSs on the 7th U.S. House? No?
Not really.
Okay. Let's look now at the what would be a new state Senate district, the 22nd. The proposed map is on your left again. The 22nd State Senate District would encompass both the cities of Racine and Kenosha. The current lines are on your right, showing that for decades, both the counties of Racine and Kenosha have had their own state senators. And Peter Barca, the Democratic leader of the Assembly, argues that the proposed map on the left destroys traditional, separate, and distinct communities of interest. Take it away, Jim. Why?
Actually, what's interesting about this one, and again, it has nothing to do with what I'm doing today with leaders, but this is something that's been advocated in two separate cycles in the federal district court. It's sometimes by independent groups, sometimes by the parties, to make these districts exactly the way they appear on the left in the proposed districts. And the reason is because as there's been more and more suburban growth in Racine and Kenosha County, clearly Norway Township has a lot more in common with the townships directly to its south than it does with the city of Racine, and so too with the districts to the far west in Kenosha County. So this is something that has been debated politically and debated in many, many different ways. Well, again, you would have remembered some of the debates that occurred here when we talk about mass transit mm-hmm. and which parts of these counties would be included or not. And so this is a classic example of the kinds of choices that you expect legislators to make in reconfiguring a district. So you now have two urban centers, both with significant minority populations, combined to provide influence to the minority populations, and the nature of the two cities, and you have a suburban area. This is the kind of thing that should be debated on the floor. It will be debated on the floor, I'm sure. But it is a classic decision driven by the changing demographics of southeastern
Wisconsin. And Craig Gilbert of the Journal Sentinel reports that this is nothing but an attempt in the 22nd to ensure that you'll always have a Democratic seat, and in the 21st that you'll always have a GOP seat. Any response?
That's not, when I look at that, that's not what's going on. I just explained the basis for it.
I understand.
People can argue whatever they'd like.
Any PSs on that Senate seat, Andrea or Rebecca?
Well, it would be nice if the people of Racine and Kenosha would have more time to have some input than they're going to have before it's debated on the floor. There was a cute editorial in the Racine paper this morning that basically that newspaper said, well, you know, we like you, Kenosha, but I don't think we want to be married. So,
okay. Any PSs, Rebecca?
Well, I think both this district and the district that we looked at from the congressional map, again, they're proposed. We don't know what the final map is going to look like. There may be amendments offered, maybe accepted on the floor or before it gets to the floor. I think that once we have a final map, if and when it passes, and if and when the governor signs it, we will take a close look at these areas and see if the proposed map ends up being the final map. And, you know, there are definitely some serious concerns
okay.
raised.
Under those standards that we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Let's look at one more district. Assembly District 15, and then we're done looking at maps. The current district is, it's represented by Democratic Representative Tony Staskunas. It encompasses his hometown of West Allis and other areas of just Milwaukee County. The proposed Assembly District 15 extends it westward into Waukesha County, a much more Republican area. Democrats like Peter Barkas say this is a blatant attempt to make sure that that the future Assembly District 15 has a Republican and will no longer be represented by Democrat Tony Staskunas. Mr. Troupas?
Oh, this is a classic. Again, these are classic situations of the exchanging of the way in which the criteria end up being applied and why courts are the worst possible arbiter of them. If you as testimony yesterday talked about, and as we see, you've got competing criteria here in the Milwaukee area. Much of Milwaukee is driven by the minority interests. I mean, let's be candid that, you know, but for that criteria, you would have very different districts, and that's a criteria that's come into effect, and so be it. The consequence of that in Milwaukee is that you have to draw those districts in the city, and everybody has to start there. Where does that push everything else? Well, it pushes it west. There's no way around that. And so you then have to make, again, classic decisions of a political process of whether or not what interests, what communities are left, and what kind of communities have similar sorts of interests. The western part of Milwaukee County is far more similar to eastern Waukesha than it is to downtown Milwaukee. I mean, so that's just a choice you make along the way, and that's what's gone on here.
So this is not a map that says, thank you, Tony Staskunas, goodbye. It wasn't drawn for that, right?
I don't know why it was drawn the way it was. All I know is looking at it, those are the criteria that you'd apply, and that's how you'd come to those conclusions.
Any PSs, Andrea, Rebecca, on that? No? Okay.
Those are some of the criteria that would apply. There are others that might factor into it.
I have two more points I want to raise, and these are complicated, so we're going to take a little bit of time. The issue of disenfranchisement. Like all of us, I followed that public hearing. I think it ran 7 hours. I didn't get all of it. But the issue is X number of voters will be disenfranchised in that we all normally vote for state senators every 4 years, but there has to be, I learned yesterday, there has to be X number of people who will not be able to vote for a state senator for 6 years. Now, I think if my notes are accurate, a aide to Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald says in this case, 299,000 or 5% of the 5.6 million residents would go 6 years. And aide to Senator Fitzgerald said this is basically the same 5% last time. The issue of disenfranchisement, I know very little. How big of an issue is it? Is it something that the courts look at? Is the proposed 299,000 indeed in line with past maps, Jim?
Yes. Yeah, it is directly in line with past maps. Judge Crabb's map would have been slightly worse. The ones that I call the Judge Crabb, the Posner's panel and Judge Crabb
yes.
In 1991. The map in 2001 was slightly better. Almost inevitably, and again, I'd love to see the Democrats come forward with something, you know, we could see an alternative, but it's hard not to have that happen.
Okay.
And the consequence is simply because of the even, odd split of Senate districts. It's a criteria. I think that, you know, people try to avoid it as best they can, but it's inevitable that, okay. that you will have that happen.
Okay.
I guess I just want to start with stating that it's nice that they're recognizing the role that the federal courts play in the redistricting process in Wisconsin.
Played.
The issue of...
to be determined. Active or past tense, Mr. Trudeau.
Yeah, thank
Excuse
you.
Me,
thank
Mark.
You.
That's okay. The issue of disenfranchising 300,000 Wisconsin citizens is definitely something that we've been looking at and something that's a cause for concern.
Okay.
And if and when a map is passed, if the final numbers are the disenfranchisement of 300,000 Wisconsin citizens, that will be something that we'll examine quite closely.
I understand.
I just mentioned,
sure.
It seemed in the hearing yesterday nobody said we tried to minimize this and tried to disenfranchise as few people as possible. What I heard, the message I heard was, well, there was this court ruling in the past and we'll try to peg it to that. So in other words, we can go to that number, not let's try to minimize it.
Okay. And then one of my final points here that I want to ask about is Senator Mark Miller at his press conference yesterday said the bill tries to cherry pick which Wisconsin judges would decide whether a Senate and Assembly had passed a legal plan. And Jim, I'm going to need you to fix this.
Let me walk through the legislation.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's Senate Bill 149. There's three companion bills, but I think it's 149 that deals with the question of venue for proceedings. Again, we have had a series of debates over three cycles, 1980, 90, and 2000, about because court proceedings were filed. Where should they be heard and who should hear them? And the question then comes, is it original jurisdiction in the state Supreme Court? So let's keep it there. So if it's in the state courts, does the Supreme Court simply take it up? Well, they're not a trial court. And so inevitably people are arguing, why is it in the state Supreme Court? They're not a trial court. They've got facts to hear, and they don't know how to deal with it. Well, we can appoint a judge somewhere, and they could hear it, and then come up with, and there's just genuine dissatisfaction with a process that has a single judge appointed. And so the 149 really sets the federal criteria. So all it does is says let's do it the same way essentially as the federal courts do, within limitations of our own judicial system, and have a three-judge panel appointed. Have the three-judge panel be representative of the state. So it doesn't, they come from three different, there's four districts in the state, and one must come from each of those districts. And then they'll sit as a trial panel and then make the appropriate recommendation to the Supreme Court, that came that way.
But Jim, you heard the criticism yesterday that it would be our state Supreme Court that would pick the three judge panel. That's a badly split Supreme Court, 4-3. Ergo, that's not a good process. Response?
You know, it's a badly split Seventh Circuit, but we have a federal constitution that provides them to appoint the three judge panel. It's a badly split U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, it's a choice question about what's the best way to do this from a venue standpoint that is fair to all of the state. After all, it's not just a La Crosse County or a Dane County or Milwaukee County matter. It's a statewide matter. So let's make sure that they have the Supreme Court has the tools available to it to appoint a statewide panel.
Andrea or
I think there needs
Rebecca
to be ample time for citizens and experts to look into this and be very careful about balance of powers issues and so forth before this thing is voted on.
Is this a separation of powers issue, Rebecca? Trying to pick your venue?
whether the state legislature can dictate to the state Supreme Court the procedures they have to follow is definitely in doubt. But what's not in doubt, and what's absolutely crystal clear, is that the state legislature cannot tell the federal courts what they can and can't do. And for the last 40 years, the federal courts have drawn the lines in Wisconsin.
Interesting on that. And I, again, this is the public position we took, have taken, is that the state courts are the courts of first preference in redistricting. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that. Everybody has said that. So we can't ignore that law. And in fact, the state Supreme Court the last time, remember, it declined to take the case. And by the way, it was a conservative majority, and I was representing Republicans going to that court, and the court declined to take the case. So they declined based on the speed with which the federal court proceeding was going, and they felt that they were more appropriate given how far they were in the process. Obviously, that is not going to be the case this time. If things happen as I think people expect, a bill will be introduced, there'll be debate, and the likelihood is that something will pass. And if it doesn't pass, something will pass early in the fall session. Okay. So it will be a state court matter, ultimately, the court of first preference.
Well, maybe a final question here. Let's talk about the process from here out. The Senate and the Assembly it's their intent to vote on it next week. Assuming Governor Walker signs it, Andrea, what happens then? Winners and losers?
Well, the League will continue to advocate for a nonpartisan process. I can tell you that much, and that's how much I really know.
Okay. Jim, what happens then? Assuming the governor signs it into law?
It becomes law, and I hope that it can go forward without any legal challenges.
And Rebecca, what happens then?
You ask about winners and losers, and I think Wisconsin citizens win when they have a district map that has boundaries that allows every single Wisconsin citizen the opportunity to effectively participate in the political process.
I understand. And going back to what you said earlier, this is one of the bedrock constitutional federal rights, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's why it is so important. But most voters don't really follow this issue closely, do they? It's really a politician's in-house game, isn't it? Or have I overstated it?
I'd like to think that there are a lot more people who are more engaged now politically because of this year. In fact, I had an email this morning from somebody who attended the whole hearing yesterday, and she said, you know, I've never been that involved actively, but I don't like being manipulated.
Wow. Okay.
Listen, our lawsuit was filed by 15 citizens from across the state, Joe and Jane Citizen, two of which happen to be former legislators. 13 are just your average citizen who are extremely engaged and extremely concerned about the fact that their right to vote is being usurped.
Any final word, James?
Oh, sure. You know, the question of redistricting is a question for the legislature and for the legislative process. It's when yesterday there was discussion about what they called justiciability. There's a very serious question whether any court should be involved in redistricting at all. There are only a few very clear criteria. They have been, if they are properly applied, no court should intervene. That is the process. Whether one is cynical today about their legislators or not, it is their responsibility to enact these. They do, and that's where it should end.
And that's where this should end, rather than start another round of debates on which court should take jurisdiction. I want to thank Andrea Kaminsky, James Troupas, and Rebecca Mason for talking about a very complex, very important issue, reapportionment. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.